Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols alongside New York Times bestselling author Brian Windhorst. I feel like I'm alongside them. Y'all loom so large in my life. And 2008 NBA Finals MVP Paul Pierce. And Brian, how would you introduce him?
He's a champ. He said so many people called him champ in 2008, he forgot his first name. One of the great quotes of all time. Love it.
There you go. Paul Pierce, otherwise known for the rest of the hour as Champ. Coming up on this show, Kyrie doubling down on his media blackout after getting hit with a $25,000 fine for himself and his franchise. We'll show you his reaction in a moment. First, though, the NBA's preseason slate of games tips off tonight. Tonight, people, it's very exciting for all of us. But with only 11 days left till opening night, still so many questions and concerns heading into the most unconventional season in the 75-year history of the association. On Thursday, the U.S. set a record for COVID-19-related fatalities for the second day in a row, surpassing 3,300 deaths. There were also around 220,000 new cases reported yesterday in this country. There's some light at the end of the tunnel thanks to vaccines that are being developed and already administered in other countries. Yesterday, an FDA panel granted emergency use authorization for a COVID-19 vaccine developed by Pfizer and a German partner company. We could see the first COVID vaccinations in America by early next week. Now, Brian, you wrote about how the NBA is crafting policy to manage widespread use of COVID vaccines. What are some of the biggest question marks at this point? Because it is such a complex issue.
Yeah, this is another unprecedented challenge for the NBA to deal with. Just based on the timing of everything, Rachel, the NBA has got a good chance to be the first pro league to try to have to deal with a policy across its player population. We don't know when that might be available. The NBA was very clear in me talking to them. They're not looking to jump the line. They realize that they've got to wait and make sure that everybody is taken care of in front of them. That said, there are health professionals out there who are saying that giving it to professional athletes earlier in this timetable might make some sense because it can show people in the public who are worried about this that it's safe and effective. The problem is they've got to show the players that it's safe and effective, and you've also got to consider, do you mandate this? Do you say players have to get this vaccine? There's other health protocols that the league does, whether it's having drug testing, whether it's getting an EKG that they mandate that you have. This is going to be very delicate and obviously could have a big impact on this season.
Paul, if it were you, would you want to take this vaccine? Where are you on this?
I'm kind of split in between. First, I need to get more information on this. You know, like, you know, who were tested first and what was the outcome? Is it 100% effective? Is it 70, 50% effective? There's so many questions that have to be asked, I believe, before you could just go in and say, hey, we have a vaccine for a virus. You know, who are the tests? Who are the people who got tested first that said it's quite effective? I'm sure there were, or it wouldn't be passed at this point, but you know, who set that example? So I'm kind of 50-50 on it right now. And then think about the players or whose family who have had COVID and recovered from it. You know, do they feel like a vaccine is even necessary? You know, I know some people recover, some people don't. So I'm really split on it right now.
Yeah, that issue is complicated, right? Because people who have already had COVID, they have antibodies. We can test for that. So we know that that's true. What we don't know, because it's such a new virus, we don't know how long those antibodies protect you. There are some cases, there have been some in this country and around the world, where people have reinfection, where they thought that they were protected because of their antibodies, but there is a different infection. They've actually genome tested, and there's a different strain of the virus that is affecting them. So that is a question mark. Earlier this week, Brian, we discussed the protocols the NBA is implementing to minimize the rise of infection for players, coaches, staff, refrain from going to restaurants, bars, large family gatherings. This really is impacting players' day-to-day lives. But you do have more than 100 players who've tested positive for COVID since the lead up to the Orlando bubble. League only has, what, around 500 players to begin with. How do you think players who have already tested positive, Brian, and who have these antibodies are going to react to being so limited in their daily lives?
This is exactly it, Rachel. And, you know, it's probably way more than 100 because the NBA has announced 100 positive tests between the restart back in the summer and the beginning of training camp now. That doesn't include the players who contracted the virus during the shutdown and also in the offseason. And you talk to trainers and other people who work with players, agents, they think that number is at least double, maybe more. They think that upwards of 40% of the league has maybe dealt with it. And so you're telling people who probably have been going to nightclubs and restaurants because they feel safe that they can't do that. And this is just a thorny issue. Then there's this, Rachel. In the initial trials of this vaccine, and this is, I'm getting this from talking to doctors, team doctors, some people get sick, especially with the second shot, for a day or two. And if a player already has antibodies and doesn't feel he needs to take it, he may not want to get a shot that's going to get him sick for even a day or two. And then there's the issue that you can still possibly carry the virus even if you've had the vaccine. So they may ask players to continue wearing masks and socially distance even after having the vaccine. And that's going to be a tough sell. And I think what Paul just described, that 50-50 mentality, that's what I'm hearing from agents and teams, that they are going to really have to educate their players to convince them to partake in this wholesale.
Paul, what do you think?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, education. And I don't...
Well, I was just going to say, what do you think the dynamic is going to be in the locker room, Paul? Because we've seen in other sports, in baseball and football, there is a sense of responsibility to each other, right? No one wants to bring this into the locker room, infect other people's lives and families. But also, guys are used to having personal freedom. So how much responsibility do you think players will feel to each other or hold each other accountable for? What's that dynamic like?
Well, you got to understand right now in the current situation that we're in, a lot of bars and restaurants are open anyway right now to the public. You know, I live here in California. I think the biggest adjustment may be like, okay, the grocery store or just being around family and friends. And the players, you know, they're going to be around each other every day. And they're going to abide by the same rules anyway. You know, I know the league is saying, no, you can't go here. But you got to understand. You can't do those things already, especially here. I'm here in California, Los Angeles, New York, places like New York. I can understand it's different in Florida, Atlanta, and maybe Texas. You know, they'll have to make an adjustment in those states. But for the most part, a lot of these states are closed. So the biggest adjustment is just, you know, finding entertainment within your home, which we've already been doing. We've already made the adjustment for the most part. And so, you know, that part will be easy. It's just, you know, getting food, grocery store running. I do a lot of grocery store running myself. So if you're telling me I can't go to the grocery store, we have apps out here these days. You can order your groceries. And so, you know, the adjustment is not going to be that from what we've already just getting on each other every day. It's going to be an issue.
Well, look, Paul, if you're saying that things we used to have to go out for, you can order in, I would tell NBA players that that's
absolutely
a wide range of categories that covers. Brian, do you think that the responsibility of players to each other is going to change from team to team depending on how competitive they are and at what point in the season they're at?
The responsibility... I mean, absolutely. I mean, as we get closer down the stretch, you're not gonna see players doing as much as they did at the beginning of the season. I mean, that's just how it's always been, you know. And then in the trying times we are, I mean, I would just hope players would be more responsible more now than ever, being that we're in a pandemic, knowing that there are a lot of lives at stake. And don't just take it for granted because you have the availability of possibly having a vaccine. You know, you got to take it each and every day, the responsibility of not only yourself, your family, but also your teammates. And so I will hope that players will be more responsible in this day and time.
We will see. All right, guys, we're going to switch gears coming up. Paul George says he owes the Clippers a trophy after signing an extension worth close to $200 million. Is that something, nothing, or everything? We'll play America's favorite game after this break. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols here with Paul Pierce, Brian Windhorst. It's time for another one of our games here on The Jump. Something, nothing, or everything. First up, Kyrie Irving. He was fined $25,000 for not speaking to the media since the start of training camp on December 1st. The Nets organization also fined the same amount. His only media interaction has been a statement he released on December 4th that did not fulfill the league's media requirements. And then today on Instagram, Kyrie posted this statement that included, quote, "I pray we utilize the fine money for the marginalized communities in need, especially seeing where our world is presently. I am here for peace, love, and greatness. So stop distracting me and my team and appreciate the art. We move different over here. I do not talk to pawns," Kyrie says. "My attention is worth more." Paul, Paul Pierce, is this fine? And is Kyrie's words something, nothing, or everything?
It's definitely something, but Kyrie has to understand, man, this is what comes with the job. You know, you're a role model, you're a superstar. Whether you're a basketball player, an actor, or whatever field you're in, you're in the limelight, and this all comes with your job. It's only a distraction if you let it be a distraction. But you got to understand, when you signed up for this, when you got drafted, when you signed these big contracts, when you're a superstar in this league, this is what you sign up for.
So this is everything to me, Rachel, and it's not because he called the media pawns. He doesn't have to like the media, that's fine. But, you know, 2.5 years ago, I went to North Dakota when Kyrie Irving went to the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe Reservation. And he went there for several reasons. And he gave those kids and those people there an incredible day as he officially joined the tribe. He donated $100,000 that day, and that was important. But the real thing, the real important, and why the media were there, was because the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe wants people who have been adopted out of their community to come back home. And Kyrie's mother was adopted out of that community. And the media giving attention to that was their ability to show to the outreach of their nation to come back. And that's where the media and awareness and the NBA players can work together. Now, I am very aware that Kyrie Irving has donated several million dollars just this year to charity endeavors. I am aware that he gave food and masks to the Standing Rock Sioux again this year. I'm aware of what he meant for those kids when on that day in North Dakota, he stood there for hours and shook every single one of their hands to give them a moment. And being there to document that was so important, not just because it's to give Kyrie Irving that he did a good deed, but because of what it means to that entire community. And for Kyrie, for somebody who cares so deeply about his outreach and what he does outside the basketball court, to act like the media doesn't play a role in that, it's just a misjudgment. And ultimately, I'm going to judge Kyrie Irving on what he does on that rectangle that's the basketball court going forward. And that's unfortunate, because we really should have a bigger conversation about what Kyrie does all around, because he is doing special things.
Well, I want to put Kyrie Irving's mind at ease in terms of fines. The way fines work in the NBA is that the revenue comes in, the Players Association and the NBA split that money, and then they farm it out to different charities. So that money is going to a good place, Kyrie, so that is good. And then in terms of the relationship with the media, look, not all media are the same, just the way not all players are the same. The media is, in general, your conduit to fans. That has changed somewhat with the rise of social media and phones and all of that, but not completely. A lot of what the fans get from players is through the media. And then there's also the money involved. The money that Kyrie makes that not only helps him enjoy the finer things in life, but helps him donate and give to the causes that are so important to him. A lot of that comes from the television contracts and the billions of dollars that pour into the league through talking to the media, being available, being a personality who is larger than life, not just what you say on the basketball court, but what you say off of it, having that voice and having the money that frankly comes with that voice that allows you to do the things you want to do, both personally and for a greater cause. And there is absolutely a way to play basketball without the media, without being fined for not talking to the media. There are courts all over this country where you can just go hoop. If you love the game and you don't want all the attendant stuff around it, I get it, man. And that is available to you. If you want to opt into this version, there are rules. And there are rules that show a respect, not for any reporter per se, but for the fans who get that information, who get to connect to you through TV, through print, through video, through all the different ways that they get to do it. And I would just encourage him also to think a little bit about that as he moves forward. But as the fines pile up, yes, Kyrie, they are going to a good place. All right, let's move on to Paul George, who signed a max extension with the Clippers yesterday. PG now signed through 2025, including a player option in the last year. And when asked about the Clippers yesterday, he said, quote, "I owe them a trophy." Listen to what else he had to say.
"This is where I want to be. This is home. I'm at home. And I want to build a real foundation. And ultimately, this is where my legacy, where I want to leave the biggest imprint on. It's not putting a gun to Kawhi and you know, telling him he's got to do this or do that. Hopefully it's a mutual bond. You know, we both enjoy playing with one another. So, you know, everybody's got their own decisions to make. And, you know, hopefully me showing my commitment, being here and wanting to play with him long term, you know, sticks out. I owe him a trophy. That's what I owe this organization. This is a window that we're trying to capture. And my commitment and my job is to try to bring a title here.
All right, Paul Pierce. We've heard Paul George saying he owes the Clippers a trophy, along with a lot of other things he said, frankly, that have come out in the last week or so. Mm-hmm. This, though, has to be what the Clippers faithful want to hear. Is it something, nothing, or everything?
Well, yeah, it's everything. I mean, you need players like Paul George caliber to win championships along with Kawhi. You know, he has a chance to build on his legacy as a Los Angeles Clipper and to start a legacy for the franchise, you know, a franchise that doesn't have a championship. And he says he owes them a trophy. I respect that. He's from L.A. He wants to bring a title to the place he's from. Hey, all the pressure's on now, Paul George. You got the huge contract. You at home. And so we all know it's tough to play at home in front of your family and friends. And so, you know, being that you signed a big deal, you at home, now it's time to bring a championship. I hope he does it.
Yeah, it's something. And Rachel, boy, when I saw this quote, I just kind of grimaced a little bit because it's one of those things that you just know people are going to bring back. I owe him a trophy. And I know he was in, you know, euphoric, and he should be. He just signed $190 million extension. And that's the thing about this trade. One of the reasons why this trade was so fantastic for Paul George, not only because he got to go home, not only because he got to play with Kawhi Leonard, but because they traded so much for him, that they are so invested in his success that they had to back it up with an extension to make sure that he remained there. So really, he's got everything he could possibly want. Now he's got to deliver, but the delivery is the hardest part, right?
Well, the biggest thing I heard from Clippers fans Absolutely. Over the last week or two was, hey, we want Paul to take accountability for himself. And in my mind, when I heard his press conference yesterday, that's what I heard from him, was him taking some accountability. So I like that. And congratulations to him, because it's not a small thing, by the way. And, you know, when he hurt his leg in 2014, we didn't know. We didn't know what Paul George's future was. And it's turned out to be pretty good and pretty, you know. It's worked out all right. Just saying. Coming up, what are reasonable expectations for John Wall after a nearly 2-year absence? We'll discuss that on the other side of the break. You're watching The Jump. So there's a line in the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off where Matthew Broderick looks at the camera and says, "Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you can miss it." Now, I don't believe they had the NBA in mind when they made that movie, but boy, they sure could have. Think where we were in training camp just last year. Russell Westbrook arriving in Houston via an extremely costly trade, a move requested by James Harden, and dressed up by Daryl Morey as the partnership that would finally bring the team back to the promised land. You all remember what we were told, that Russ and James had been friends since they were teenagers growing up here in L.A., that their relationship was so rock solid it would overcome any of the issues Harden had experienced with previous co-stars like Chris Paul or Dwight Howard. Yeah. Well, here we are at training camp a year later, and the Rockets basically have their Ferrari up on blocks trying to roll back the mileage odometer. Westbrook asked for and got a ticket out of town. Harden skipped the start of team practices to take a party tour of the American South and Southwest, a trip that landed him in a 6-day COVID protocol. Bueller, Morey's gone. Coach Mike D'Antoni's gone. In fact, when the Rockets take the court tonight for their first preseason game, it will be two completely different former All-Stars leading the way, John Wall and Boogie Cousins, each returning from completely separate but equally major sets of injuries. It's unfortunate, frankly, that what should be a triumphant moment for each of them has been just a bit swallowed up by all the controversy surrounding Harden. But regardless, it's happening, and they both sound pretty hyped. Take a look, starting with Wall. He slid into his press conference yesterday in those trademark shades. Hey, John's got some Ferris in him, too, and here's what he had to say.
There's going to be a lot of anxiousness and a lot of excitement to step on that floor and when the jump ball goes up, but once the ball touched my hands one time, it's over with.
I'm excited, man. It's been a long road for me, so this is what I work for, to be able to get back on the floor and play the game I enjoy to play. And I'm super excited. I've said it time and time again, I'm grateful to be in this position. I know what it feels like to be on the other end of things, and I know it's more than possible to be on those other end of things any day.
Indeed. And now how will the run of them look tonight? I'm not expecting that much. I mean, one, it's a preseason game. Two, as we saw watching Paul George and Gordon Hayward in their first years back from major injuries, it takes a while before a player looks like his old self. And with Wall in particular, you can look at the history of guards coming back from Achilles injuries. Now, some of these guys are older than John, but to say that production drops, it'd be an understatement, right? Still, the video we've seen of Wall in practices and open runs these past months, it's encouraging. His speed may be slightly diminished, but he's apparently still got the hops. He's also pretty obviously amped to be playing with Boogie. And there are some real parallels here, too. Like Russ and Harden, Wall and Boogie go way back to when they were teenagers, even before they each played at Kentucky. But there's also something deeper they both share, and you could hear it in those sound bites, and you will feel it when they take the court tonight. After such grueling journeys back from injuries, both of these guys have a pretty deep appreciation now of just how special it is to be a pro basketball player. They both intend to, yes, stop and take a look around tonight so they don't miss the moment. After all, life in the NBA sure does move pretty fast. Paul, what are your expectations for John Wall this season in Houston?
Well, I expect him to really... I see a smile on his face. You know, when you sit out so long and you have a chance to come back, I expect that. But as far as playing-wise, I expect him to be solid. Do I expect him to be an all-star in the first year? No, not really, because it's tough coming off the injuries and missing 2 years playing in a league where players continue to get younger, players continue to get better. And so as long as he's out there playing with a smile on his face, and for John Wall to be John Wall, though, for him to have that smile, I think James Harden is going to have to change the way he plays. For Boogie to be happy on the court, James Harden is going to have to change the way he played. But I just want to see him out there smiling, being a competitive John Wall, and happy to be back there on the court.
One thing you got to remember about John Wall is he's really been injured 3 of the last 4 years. Dating back to 3 years ago, he had double knee surgery after that season. I remember him telling me at the time he could barely jump over a phone book. He got that knee surgery, and he was so good after that double knee surgery that the Wizards gave him this Supermax contract. And then before he tore his Achilles, remember he had had surgery to remove bone spurs out of his heel, which was dramatically affecting him. So we just frankly haven't seen John Wall healthy almost at all for the entire one tire and presidential term. So what I really want to see is, where is John Wall healthy? Is he healthy? Because don't forget, it's not just the Achilles he's recovering from. It's also these bone spurs. And he thinks that's a good thing, Rachel. He's saying, not only is my Achilles healthy, but those bone spurs are gone and my knees are healthy. Just you watch. Let's do it.
Brian, there's a lot of people in this country who'd like to forget about the last 4 years. We just put up John's numbers and sort of who he relates to in NBA history. When he's on, I'm sorry. I mean, the level of a problem that John Wall is ridiculous. I don't know if we can put the graphic up again. The guys that he's in the conversation with is insane, right? Take a look at this list. Obviously, Oscar Robertson goes way above and beyond everyone. But I just think that he can really be something if the health comes back. Brian, do you think there's any chemistry or dynamic issue at the fact that James Harden has not been in any of these practices? John Wall and Boogie have been going through. And you heard Paul say, hey, James is going to have to adjust his style of play. Well, not only is he going to have to adjust, but these guys will already be in sort of a rhythm before he even gets there.
Well, look, John has been given a very difficult hand here. First off, the Wizards have essentially said, we don't want your contract so bad that we're going to attach a first-round pick to you. Now, look, no one's going to cry for him. He's making $40 million a year. But that's when that happens to you in your career, it basically means the team doesn't believe in you anymore. And so that's happened. Then he gets to Houston, where he openly has said, hey, I talked to James Harden. He was excited about playing with me. He shows up ready to go, and then Harden doesn't show up. And Harden either was not being honest with him or changed his mind. So John Wall's been given just a very difficult hand. But I will say this. The expectations are at the point where he can only go up. And that actually, in a strange way, puts him in a good position.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, he hasn't played in so long. You know, he only can go up. But, you know, based on the company, when you see the type of guard that John Wall is, can he get back to that level? You know, what we got to understand is when you have Achilles and knee issues, that puts years on your career. That puts years on your life. So, you know, he's a certain age now. You probably add two more years to that. So he's probably going to be a little slowed down, especially when you get deeper into the season, 60, 70 games. But I just want to see him happy out there. I want him to be solid. And we know he won't be All-Star this year. But I'm not saying that's not a position or a place he can't get to in the following year or year after, because he's such a great athlete and he has such a great drive to be great in this league.
Amen. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing both of those guys get out on the court tonight. John Wall, Boogie Cousins, it has been quite a journey you have been on these past few years. Congratulations on getting back. All right, coming up, we will take a deep dive into the Portland Trailblazers. Added some great pieces over the offseason. Are they legit contenders out West? Stick around. We'll find out. Let's kick off our Blazers preview with the big cliffhanger from last season. Yep. This is where we left off. Portland added Robert Covington and his Cantor, Derrick Jones Jr., and Harry Giles to their roster. They also re-signed Carmelo Anthony and are bringing back their core of Lillard, McCollum, a healthy Nurkic, and Collins. All right, Paul, do you consider the Blazers to be legit threats to win the West this season?
You know, as good as Damian Lillard has been, and he's one of the most underappreciated superstars that this league has probably ever seen, I just don't think so. In order to be a legitimate contender in this league, you have to have a legit two superstars. You hear me? Just a few years ago, you needed three or four. But this day and age, with LeBron and AD, you got Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, you need two superstars to be a legit contender in this league these days.
You know, I think Damian Lillard is one of the most excitable guys to watch in all of American sports right now. If he's on television, you got to watch him, because you don't know when he's going for 45. You don't know when he's pulling up from the logo. You don't know when he's going to talk trash to guys. You don't know when he's going to start tapping the wrist. I love watching him play. And I think that's an incredible compliment to the Blazers. I also think they had a terrific offseason, adding defensive players, as you just mentioned, Rachel. But I can say all of those things and still say I don't think they're one of the top three teams in the West. And I don't think that's an insult. And maybe Dame would take that as a challenge and he would try to overcome that. And they do have a lot of talent, and I do think they're going to be better. But I just don't see him cracking that nut right now. And I don't, and this is the challenge for him, I don't see how they do that. With the talent in LA, the talent in Denver, with where Luka is bringing the Mavericks, I just think it's a hard barrier for them to overcome. And it's not an insult.
I agree with all of that. I would also say that the Miami Heat showed this past season, and it was unconventional in a bubble, but they showed that sometimes the favorites don't make it. And I would say that Portland got better this offseason. So there's that, right? All right, let's talk about the games that Blazers fans should binge watch this season. There's a lot of intriguing matchups here, but I want to spotlight their December 28th showdown with the Clippers, who they faced in the past postseason. How spicy, Paul Pierce, do you expect their first meeting to get after the beef that went down, not only in the bubble, but remember, CJ and Dame were clowning those guys on Twitter after the Clippers lost to the Nuggets.
Yeah, it was some good banter going on between these two. And, you know, the Dame Lillard against Patrick Beverley, who's Patrick Beverley's one of the better defensive guards. You know, Dame Lillard said he put out Paul George in the playoffs before. And this is the type of subplots that we like as NBA fans. We like to see the banter back and forth and then see what you're going to do to back it up the next time you guys see each other. So, you know, please believe, Beverly better get his rest before that night, because Dame Lillard is going to be ready. I'm going to tell you that.
I agree. Like, I can't wait to see that, you know, because we know Dame's been keying up for that. The other thing is the Clippers, you know, they had that sort of slow start to last season, and you really didn't know what you were going to get from them early on. Well, now they're singing a completely different tune. Now they're saying Kawhi's healthy, Paul George is healthy, everybody's been playing since day one. So you got to figure that the Clippers team that shows up, even that first week of the season, is going to be looking to make its own statement, and there's a great opportunity right there against the Blazers and a whole different defensive profile they're going to going to have to face. So I'm already excited. I didn't remember that game was happening. You reminded me today, Rachel. Now I'm looking forward to it.
Binge watch. All right, going on our TV theme. Finally, it's spoiler alert time. Caesars William Hill gives the Blazers. Let's see what they give them, where their odds are on winning out west. Ooh, not at the top of that list, I would say, at all. Ninth best. Paul, what's your bold prediction for Portland in this regular season?
Ooh. So you're telling me that they're not, ninth best means you don't even make the playoffs.
Well, there's a play-in tournament this year, Paul.
I believe that the Blazers are a playoff team. I don't buy that they're the ninth best. And so they'll be very competitive. You got to understand, the Blazers have been at the top of the West for years now. Because they had a setback last year because of injuries, you got to remember, the last few years, they finished in the top four. And so I do not buy that they're the ninth best odds in the West to take it. No, I do not.
Yeah. That is an insult. I'd like to make the bold prediction that Carmelo Anthony finally embracing a bench role, had to be talked into it in year 18, could, you know, be a contender for sixth man of the year. I can't say that, but I expect Gary Trent to have a huge season. He had contract negotiations in the offseason, couldn't come to terms on an extension. Look for a very motivated Gary Trent to have a big year for the Blazers this year.
Interesting. Well, remember, and Paul, you spent a lot of time in Las Vegas. The odds are based on how they expect people to bet, not necessarily how they expect the teams to play out. Up next, we'll talk about Joel Embiid. He hired a whole army of wellness experts to help keep him healthy and in shape all season. Is that going to take his game to another level? We will discuss. It's crunch time here, guys, on The Jump. Joel Embiid said he hired a chef, nutritionist, physical therapist, and massage therapist over the offseason to help stay in better shape year-round. Paul, what is your reaction to Joel making this kind of commitment to his body?
Well, that's great to hear, because when you hear players like LeBron James, who said they spend about $1 million on themselves off the court to be ready on the court, that's a smart investment. Invest in yourself, Joel. You need those massage therapists. You need those nutritionists. If that's what's going to make you a better player, if that's going to help you reach your full potential, because I believe he has an MVP caliber potential, then you must do that. And I agree. I love that he's putting that effort in at this stage in his career.
Yeah, I would say the most important thing for the 76ers this season is Joel Embiid's health. So this is why it's important.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk a little Pacers. They announced that TJ Warren has plantar fasciitis in his right foot. He's going to be listed as week to week. Warren had that great run in the bubble. Bubble Jordan, that's amazing. Was the Pacers' leading scorer last season. Paul, how big of a setback is this for Indiana?
That's a huge setback, because you got to understand, with Oladipo not really returning to proper form, TJ Warren is arguably their best player. And so when you don't have that asset out there at the beginning of the season, it creates chemistry issues and a guy who you rely on and in the scoring department.
Yeah, this is a problem for two reasons. Number one, he's been dealing with this issue since the spring, and it's obviously not healed. And then obviously you got a guy in a contract year with a lot to prove who may be diminished. This was a pretty big piece of information that came out that affects the Pacers going forward.
And you still have Oladipo, who is trying to make his way back in one form or another. And obviously chemistry and everything being a little bit different is always going to be a problem. You may notice, gentlemen, that my background has changed. That's because while we were doing the show in the last segment, all the lights in the studio went out. This is a problem if you're trying to do television, I'm just saying. And I'm going to give a huge shout out to our crew who rushed me into a different part of the building. And I am sitting now in what we call a flash studio, finishing the show, because the show must go on. The show must go on. And in fact, I want to bring back one of our staples here at The Jump. It's the League Pass game of the night. We can finally say it again. The slate this evening, there's a couple to choose from. Let's focus, though, on Magic Hawks at 7 Eastern. The Hawks adding Rajon Rondo, Danilo Gallinari, Bogdan Bogdanovic to the roster this offseason. So, Paul, how high should the bar be for this new-look Hawks team?
Well, the bar should be playoffs. You know, a team that finished at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, when you add these type of veterans and this type of talent to go along with Trae Young, listen, they're committing to their young superstar, saying, hey, we want to give you the necessary help to help you get to the playoffs. And I like what Atlanta has did. And I see this as a playoff team this year and a team that can scare some teams in the playoffs, to be quite honestly.
You know, there's been a bit of an arms race for the back end of the East playoffs. And normally you don't focus a heck of a lot on 7-8 seeds, but there's some pressure on some teams to make it, and the Hawks are there. You mentioned, Rachel, all of this money that they spent to bring in guys, and you're not bringing in Rajon Rondo at this point in his career to just have, you know, mild competition. But you look at the Charlotte Hornets, they invested $120 million in Gordon Hayward. You look at the Washington Wizards, they traded for Russell Westbrook. Those are teams that found themselves outside the playoffs last year. And now you have the intense competition of Atlanta and Orlando, as we see tonight, who's trying to stay in there. The Hawks are going to be expected to get a lot better, and the teams in front of them are good, and the teams around them are competitive. They're going to have to get off to a really fast start. Otherwise, there's going to be pressure there as the season goes along.
But this is exciting for the NBA, right? Because now that we have this play-in tournament, You want there to be high stakes. You want there to be good players in that 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th spot, because that means we're going to have some serious action at the beginning of the playoffs, and that'll be really fun. So I am looking forward to that. All right, guys, this just in at the buzzer. Earlier in the show, we put up Kyrie's Instagram story where he said, "Do not talk to pawns. I do not talk to pawns," in reference to, and he was, of course, talking about the media. Well, Garry Kasparov, former world chess champion and the chairman of a chess foundation, replied with a tweet, "There's nothing wrong with talking to pawns," he said. "It's when they start answering you that you have a problem." Brian, Garry Kasparov is replying to Kyrie. I don't know what world we're living in.
We're at peak 2020. We just reached it. Thank you. Shut it down. Thank you very much, everybody.
Shut it down right away.
That's just unbelievable. Now, I do want to note he is a sports fan. I have
what
seen his
rooks?
Twitter feed. But, yeah, I don't know who's acceptable to talk to, where the line is, if it's knights, if it's bishops. I like that apparently Kyrie has been watching the Queen's Gambit like I have. It's very good. I would recommend it to everybody. Thank you again to our control room. Thank you again to our crew who got us back up and running during this show. Hope it's been a good week for you guys. Tonight, you can see me and Paul. We're doing a little preseason action. We'll be there at halftime for you. See you then.